So just like last week, we're joined again tonight by our buddy Mark. Mark, word.
Hey there.
I wish you would come here.
We've been talking about outtakes from the Larry Sanders Show, and apparently Mark is channeling that activity. But the thing that I want to mention is, and it won't be by the time that you hear this, but tonight, as we record, it's actually Mark's birthday.
Hey.
So.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. I didn't know that either.
So.
You guys were holding out on
us. We were holding out. And
happy birthday.
Holding out.
Thank you.
What are you, like 52?
I am like 52.
Yes, exactly. Anyway, Mark, a raising of the chalice to you. Here, here, boys.
Cheers. Spill any shit on my computer.
Yeah, don't spill on the computer, but
still.
Wanted to make sure that we brought that up at the top of the show. And then, Shane, you had a couple of things that were on your mind.
Well, we'll get to that in just a second. But one thing that I wanted to say is every time that we've gotten to the garage the last few weeks, it's just getting chillier and chillier and chillier. And I remember there were times during the summer where I never thought I'd ever see.
We were all three giant sweat stains.
Yeah. I didn't know that I'd ever survive.
I actually kind of thought it was good for me because I was like, well, if I'm out here, you know, having a few cocktails and I literally sweat through it all before I leave the garage, like, how much trouble could you be in? Right?
And you were the sweatiest.
I was.
That
well,
is some real logic right there, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. You'd be like, Glenn's exclamation point. But still.
The musical?
Yes.
Yeah.
I bet John Madden would have really liked to have done the play-by-play of you guys.
In the hot garage, I'm sure he would have loved to come out of retirement for that shit.
That sounds more like a Caliendo setup, but still. Anyway.
All right, let's get to the show. I'm Shane.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Kevin.
And I'm Mark.
This is Somebody Likes It.
I love how you do that. I'll never get over it. It's like the producer of a TV show, like 1, 3, 2, 1, and then point.
Well, and the sad reality is it's never, like, it's always already started, so then I have to go back and edit it on the back end in order to make sure everything syncs up. But
so you're a shitty producer is what you're saying.
I'm saying that I do okay, but in real time, it is not exactly accurate. No. So
I just want to say this is some fascinating audio. Can we talk about a thing, maybe?
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
But we'll fix this conversation in post.
Oh, so great.
I have a couple of things that I want to talk about. I like doing some musical current events right around this time because it definitely sets the show at a place in time. But I noticed this. We were talking about something before the show, and we'll get back to that in a minute. But so there's a Target right by my house, and I went there several times last week, and
aim for it?
I did.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Kevin.
Yeah,
we can fix that.
He is a dad. I will point this out. Kevin is a dad, and
he's working up some new material, Ryan.
Yeah. Sure, exactly.
I noticed that there was an army of, I mean, collectively an army over several days of college age and high school age women buying the new Taylor Swift album. And
that record has sold more than in its debut week than any record since, what is it, like 2001 or something?
2002, it was Eminem.
Is
that how you say it? Eminem?
Eminem. Eminem.
It
was Eminem.
Eminem.
Eminem. So, yeah.
Sibilance.
It sold. I was amazed. And the first time I saw these women, they're like maybe 18, 19 years old. And there was one album left. There was one CD. Number one, who knew the 18 and 19 year old girls bought CDs still?
They're
number
the
two.
Ones.
Yeah. It
Mark
was,
is raising his hand. And I'm not really sure like how yeah, I feel about that.
Well, I hang out at Target and I watch girls buy CDs. Much like Shane, apparently.
I'm just like, it's over.
I don't collect data on it, however.
Like a trench coat. And,
just hanging out in the corner, yeah, just peeking my head around.
Because that would be the best way to be on the down low at Target.
they had
looked like Kinnison.
There was one CD left and they had like a little conversation. Like at first, the one girl was like, well, you can have, you know, it's yours. You can have it. She's like, no, no, you have it. And then the girl goes, okay. And she's like, and then the one girl just clearly thought that she was going to kick it back down to her. And she was pissed.
I so want to see a Taylor Swift last CD catfight.
It was awesome.
So I noticed there in the little display in Target with the Taylor Swift CDs, and I, when I was, you know, stalking all the girls buying Taylor Swift CDs.
Of course. You just have to hang around the corner and act like you're looking at, like...
She has, like, her own line of, like, greeting cards as well. And I started to think, like, because, I mean, speaking of, like, contemporary news in music, you know, she's raised a big stink in the music scene by pulling her whole catalog off of Spotify.
Yep.
And, like, there's this
because
whole sense...
she can. Like,
well, but there's this whole sense of kind of like, I'm an artist and I should be respected, and I agree with her, completely agree with her. But then I kind of feel like she's selling out to Target because she's
has this exclusive line of greeting cards. Exclusive line of greeting cards, but also that's like she has a partnership with Target.
Well, and her pulling her stuff off Spotify wasn't about like artist integrity, even though she may have framed it that way. It's because she wanted to sell records.
And she of fucking
course.
Did.
And it worked.
Yeah. Well, and she's in a position where she can do that. I will say that this is mostly analogous. There was an article in Esquire a few months ago. It was an interview with George Clooney. He was talking about sort of the currency of not of being unavailable. And that's what I thought about when she pulled her stuff off Spotify. Even if like the idea is
hey,
to like
if
sell
you could
more records.
Go listen to that record for free, would you buy it?
Yeah. Well, right.
Well,
exactly.
No. I mean, I think there's an interesting thing to be said of with her in particular. She's one of those artists that has that sweet spot to where she is completely overexposed, but people are so into her that she's not overexposed enough. I think that she honestly would have sold a ton of records even if she had that on Spotify, just because of the way that people feel drawn to her.
Well,
or whatever. She's a broken little bird or something.
Her you know, target audience is right at that form.
See what you did there.
You are working up new material.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, it's sad trombone. But, you know, but her crowd is like right at that age where they're forming their sort of lifelong attachments to, you know, that those girls will wistfully look back at that 1989 record 20 years from now and go like that will be some sort of special touch point for them. That's interesting. Like
without a doubt. Yeah. Yeah. And there are also a lot of 30, 40, 50 year old men, straight and gay, that have Taylor Swift shrines in their home that will look back on being. Mark's giving me a wide eyed.
No, man.
Stop,
down low.
Stop.
Down low.
All right. The other thing I want to talk about real quick.
On the Iron Tray.
Real quick. I found out today that I want to say Bobcat Goldthwait.
Bob Geldof.
Bob Geldof.
Close.
He's announcing that.
I mean, hey, they're save the world.
There's the crime lineup you never see.
Bob Geldof.
Bobcat Geldof?
it's a great idea. He was announcing today or yesterday that he will be producing. And for those of you that don't know, I believe in 1983, 84, during the Ethiopian famine, he got a shit ton of very famous British musicians together, and they did like a like a We Are the World kind of thing called Do They Know It's Christmas?
We Are the World.
But it's that kind
set
of...
Set the template, but yes.
We Are the World, a lot of... Whatever, you know what I'm saying.
More Taylor Swift fans know about We Are the World.
It's true.
That's probably true.
Probably.
That is our...
Michael Jackson was in We Are the World. I don't know why that's pertinent, but it is.
Maybe it was the We Are the Children line.
Right? Like, I'll bet he wrote, you know, he wrote that with Lionel Richie, and I'll bet he wrote that line.
Yes. What if we put the...
So they're doing another one to go out to support Ebola research, and boy, that just seems...
Ebola research.
We are the vaccine.
I just felt like it needed to be... I honestly cynically thought immediately when I heard that shit, I was like, oh, did the Boomtown Rats have a Greatest Hits album floating around there somewhere? He just pops his head up about every 10 years because he's done this. This is the fourth time they've done this. I think they did it for the tsunami in 2004.
Can you name two Boomtown Rats songs?
No, I can't even name one.
I can name one.
You can?
I Don't Like Mondays.
I've never heard that.
And we're the Boomtown Rats.
Yeah. Thank you. Good night.
You know, if they follow the, what was it, the Vapors, then they'll put out four greatest hits records.
Yeah,
on
well,
I thought you were going to say if they followed the Taylor Swift model of album marketing, you probably would know two songs.
All of their stuff would be a target.
Okay, on the task at hand.
So, yeah, so...
we did listen to a record this week.
Yeah.
That's true. We should talk about it.
And it's a vast departure from Taylor Swift, and it's a vast departure from Bob Geldof's immense catalog.
Vast departure from last week's album.
Well, that was kind of...
Thank the
that
Lord.
Was, we that can't was, all be Meatloaf.
That was kind of my intent. So, yeah, so last week, this week was my turn to pick a record, and last week we did the comic opera opus that is Meatloaf's Bat Out of
Regional
Hell.
Regional theater.
Yes, exactly. And so after I finished, you know, smashing my face into my computer keyboard over and over again for several days while I thought about that song or any of the songs on that record, I thought that I would try and go a different direction. And one of the things that I've intentionally tried to do is occasionally bring us forward to the modern day. And there's a band called Real Estate that put out a record called Atlas this year. And what I had heard off of it, I liked, but I didn't know any of their back catalog, and I didn't know much about this record, and so I sort of set out to get to know it this week as a vast departure, a cleansing, you might call it, from last week.
Yeah, it's hard to find two more polar...
Disparate works of art.
Diametrically opposite.
Yeah.
One of them is awful.
Bring out the thesaurus here.
Just even aside from that, like there's not even 1 second of subtlety in Meatloaf's Bat Out of Hell, and that's what this entire record is.
Yeah.
Okay, well, so what, there's 10 songs on this album, is that correct?
Something like that.
I believe there's
yeah.
10 songs, and it comes in around 33 minutes total. And
so the same amount of songs, but half as long.
Two more songs, but 15 minutes shorter.
Well, and Meatloaf, like, clubs you over the head, and this record is, like, afraid to ask the girl out at the dance.
Yeah, and he would never talk about The Wolf with the Red Roses, or whatever the hell that was.
No, but that would be poetry that he would write in his secret diary about his crush.
Yeah, maybe, yeah. Well, certainly, I mean, it's... It is a muted record intentionally, and I think one of the things that I read repeatedly about this album and have kind of come to experience is the restraint that this band uses. Like, you know, there are times when you see them like sort of stretch their legs a little bit, but not that much. Like they sort of intentionally stay within the confines of what it is that they do pretty well.
I would agree with that.
I think we were talking a couple of weeks ago about Electra Pura, and I think I was saying, one of us was saying about how Yola Tengo is the model of consistency. In that, they consistently put out good record after good record after good record. Real Estate is also a model of consistency in that every single song sounds pretty much like every single song on the record. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but they're all mid-tempo, same instrumentation, very similar melodies.
Well, what it reminded me of is kind of the way I feel about Death Cab and the way I feel about The Shins is like most of their songs are really pleasant, you know, and I don't have anything bad to say about them except for that I don't really remember them that much. But when they nail it big time.
I completely in fact, I think I have almost the exact same notes of what you just said. Let me just get this out of here real quick. There's not a song on this record I don't like, but
there's
I agree.
There's no
with,
art turd that like there was.
No, yeah,
there's no
steaming
art turd.
But track 13.
I feel like this band. This album in particular, and we'll get to that in a second. If you listen to these songs, there are some of these songs that are just fucking home runs. But taken in a group, you kind of get desensitized because they have so much similarity. Again, they're all mid-tempo. There's a melancholic, even though it's not sad, it's just kind of melancholy feel.
Did you notice how much the vocals actually sound like Stone Roses, though?
Dude, it's in my notes.
Like Ian Brown.
Yes. You totally got a point I wanted to make in a second before I did. But yay, see, you and I are pretty much on the same page about this. But this album is made for a playlist or a mixtape.
A rainy day.
No. That's another one, Ryan. It says great rainy day album.
Have a drink after this.
The hive mind on the other side of the table.
That's pretty funny, actually.
This
is like the
night that we both discovered that we're not crazy about the Coen brothers at the same time, but we'd known each other for like 18 years. Just never talked about it.
Everything that you're saying right now is in my notes. It's crazy. But seriously, if you think about it, like the songs that I like the most on this record, let's see, had Hard to Hear and Past Lives, the first two songs, those are they crush it on those songs. But I think if you nestled them in between two other dissimilar songs on a playlist or a mixtape, they would be much more effective than they are the way that they're nestled in the album.
Well, and it's all down tempo, right? So if you use this is probably a terrible analogy.
Mid-tempo.
Down tempo from mixtape fare. So like a lot of times, the way that I tend to think about mixtape songs sometimes is that, like, to use the puppies at the pound analogy, it's like they're all like trying to be the loudest
trying to
get your attention. And like these songs are okay to be like a change of pace.
Okay, so I know I didn't really make any friends with Meatloaf last week.
Meatloaf had been here, and he lives in Austin, he would have been your friend.
Let me start with the disclaimer that I actually really did enjoy this album a lot. But from the opening chords, that open tuning guitar, that tremolo electric,
a lot of 12
stretch
string
in the background, I just thought this is Ocean Blue for the millennial set.
Could be.
And, you know,
that's fair. And
there are times where I could sit down and listen to this album and just totally get into it. Unfortunately, when I listened to it the first time was not one of those times, and I found it difficult to kind of really get into that groove because it's that mid-tempo, kind of that, you know.
I think this makes really great background music. Yeah. Jesus, Shane.
I know. We're on the same fucking page thing. Like,
you guys just need to get a room.
Before you get married, man.
I will say this. The thing about real estate is, even if you're not into the album, it's a pretty good investment.
Thanks,
also,
Kevin.
About to be a father a second time.
Look, he's here all week.
That's
folks.
Why he's working his new material out.
Trying to meet Loaf.
We didn't even talk about that earlier.
I want to say one more thing about real estate, which is that Steve Martin once said, you know, the important thing about opening a business is location, location, location. He's like, no, I don't believe that. I actually believe it's location, 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 location. So you got to put an extra location in there.
That is profound.
That was his whole reasoning. Real estate. Anyway, go ahead.
Real estate.
Why don't we play a real estate
song? Is that all you
have
to say about real estate?
Hopefully. Okay, yeah. So the single off this record is Talking Backwards. Why don't we spin that one first?
Okay,
this
do
is
it.
Talking Backwards.
Brother.
Word.
Yeah. No, I actually think that is a perfect pop song, Talking Backwards.
This is where we're going to differ.
Well, you're allowed.
For the first time all night,
here's an anecdote. It is the first time all night that we've differed. But Kevin, as you'll recall, we met up at a newish watering hole the other day. Literally on the way there, I heard that song, and I was like, man, I've heard this song like three times this week. It's amazing. I need to just look it up when I get there. And the station that plays it, it's a fucking Clear Channel station, but they have a pretty decent playlist, but they never fucking announce what the songs are, which I think is dick, because they're just trying to drive
Shazam
traffic.
That shit.
Yeah, well, they're just trying to drive traffic to their website.
Right.
And anyway, like, fuck you. But I like this song so much that I was just going to go look it up anyway. And then when I showed up, we ended up talking about other shit, and I forgot. But I was jazzed, like, when, you know, you picked this record, and I was like, that's who that is.
Yeah, Ryan texted me later that night, and he was like, oh, heard this in the car on the way up to the bar the other night, so it was cool, and I did think that there was some of it that might be in your sweet spot, because it's muted, it's not the same flavor.
Sort of arpeggiated guitar deal, and I'm a sucker for that. I just am, and less so, apparently.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good song, and it's just... it's one of those. It's kind of like the law of diminishing returns for me. Like I feel it resembles. Okay, so I'm pretty familiar with the album. I had never heard this album before, other than that song I've heard on the radio a ton. But I'm pretty familiar with the album that came before Easy, and I love that record. It's really similar in a lot of ways, but I think I think the songs are stronger, and it's a little more varied stylistically, just a little bit. And that song, if it had been on Easy, I think it would have been one of the quality-wise, middle-wise, but it fits more on Easy stylistically, I think, than this album.
I've never heard a fucking note from any other record it's been. So.
And let me say that one of the things I think that's interesting about you making that comparison, Jane, or at the very least, one of the things that struck me about this record is that lyrically, it's pretty, it feels to me like it might be in your wheelhouse. Like it's like lyrically, there's a lot of sort of interesting, the contrast between like sort of the muted yet sort of like shimmering tones of some of these songs, and then the sort of the darkness or the way that it's been characterized in some of the reviews. Like there is a melancholy that goes along with this record that's not present on some of their earlier work.
So the Pitchfork review of it in particular says that the once ideal pool party band, in other words, has turned to soundtracking the cleanup. Everyone's gone. The sky's threatening rain. There are cigarette butts floating in the pool, and we've all got to work tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot about this album that I like. It is in my wheelhouse in a lot of ways. I mean, lyrically it is. Also, sonically, the thing that I think it works the best. I mean, again, taken song by song by song, I think it's more effective than as a whole. As a whole, it kind of washes out, which is fine depending on what you want. When it's raining and you want to light some incense and sit on your couch and read a book and have this on in the background, it works perfectly.
And if you want to light a book and take a look at some incense,
then I think you might want to go ahead and put some...
Are you talking backwards right now?
I might as well be.
Talking backwards masking? That's a meatloaf thing if you want to light a book. And...
We're just in perfect circle.
We might as well be...
I like your little dance.
Ryan might be having a stroke.
Wait, is that a little clip from Bat Out of Hell? Or did you just make that shit up right now?
No, that's from Bat Out of Hell.
It was? Yeah. Okay, I thought that was just like your interpretation of how... wrote a song on Bat Out of Hell...
It was either from Bat Out of Hell or some like weird musical review I saw at Astroworld when I was 11.
Same thing.
Yeah.
Really, it is.
So, but I do think that one of the interesting things that kind of gets brought up about this record sometimes is that with some of their earlier work, you know, the bent on that is they're in that place in your like early to mid 20s where you really sort of think in the future tense a lot, like about this is what my life's going to be like, this is what my potential is, and in this case, the front man for this band he's got his first kid on the way, and sort of the juxtaposition between that is like, okay, well, this is actually what my life is as opposed to what it could be. And it sounds like he's pleased with where it netted out, but at the same time, like, you know, a little...
It's wistful.
It's wistful. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, that's... Like, earlier, I wrote something about it's not a sad record, but it's got a melancholic feel. And I just realized what I really meant was it's a wistful album, which can be melancholic.
Yeah, but it has a little bit more positive connotation.
Yeah. I mean, right, exactly.
Wistful, you're looking off into the distance and contemplating. And melancholy, you're like kind of bummed.
One of them has a fixed creepy gaze.
I really wish that
the fixed creepy gaze is from Mark when he was watching the girls at Target.
I don't know that what the look that Ryan just gave as he demonstrated wistful was pretty priceless.
That kind of reminded me of Joan of Arc staring at God.
I get that a lot.
Yeah, sure. You remind me of Joan of Arc.
You know, if I had a nickel.
So
I'd have a nickel.
Yeah, exactly. So I tell you what, why don't we Shane, one of the songs that you mentioned that you did connect with on this record was the second song, Past Lives.
I love that song. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of songs I like quite a bit on this record. Toward the end of it, I think it peters out a little bit, but that's a discussion we'll have later. Yeah. There's something about that song in particular that reminds me of Roller Coaster Era. And by the way, this album would, if a time machine happened, if someone came into the future in a time machine from 1994 and brought back Atlas to 1994 and just put it on the record shelves, no one would bat an eye.
No,
I mean,
agree.
It's straight out of 1993, 1994, which is not a bad thing. It's a great thing.
Were you about to name check Mark Kozalek's band? Is that
the Red House Painters? Yeah. There's something about this song that sonically sounds like Roller Coaster Era, Red House Painters to me.
Interesting.
Yeah, at his most, at the poppiest that he gets, not quite as slow, but there's a sonic.
Well,
thing.
No, well, a little bit. Go ahead.
It's funny that you bring that up because, like, off that record, there's exactly one song that I love.
But you
above
haven't,
all over others.
But you also haven't listened to that album in 20 years.
That's fair and true, but I have listened to it.
20 years ago, I think you might find yourself in a different place.
You think
place.
Well, 20
now,
years more mature now? I don't know if that's true.
Even though like maybe the eras don't line up exactly, I almost think if we're talking about the canon of Mark Kozalek's work, then we're really... It almost feels a little bit more like Sun Kill Moon to me in a way than it does Red House Painters, in that like I think that it's a little bit more fulfilled than some of the spareness of some of those Red House Painters work.
Yeah, I mean, I'm specifically thinking of a particular couple of songs on that particular record.
Oh, sure. And you do. Like, I think in fairness, like, you bring up a really good point, which is to say there are hallmarks of other bands that are clearly heard here. Like, the Feelies gets name-checked a lot. Like... somebody mentioned the Shins, like, okay, yeah, I could see a little bit of that too. Like, it's Fey and Spare and Quiet and some of those things that are, but beyond that, like, it doesn't necessarily feel like that.
Well, I was the one who brought that up, and I don't necessarily think that they sound exactly like the Shins or like Death Cab that I brought up.
I don't think we thought that.
Yeah, but it just reminded me of it in that, like, you know, man, they can hit it out of the park, and then they can do a bunch of stuff that's pretty good.
why don't you play a little bit of Past Lives?
All right, yeah, let's do that. Well, let's just Past Lives. So the Shirley MacLaine song on the record, Past Lives. Shane.
Oh, I just now got that one. I did not see where you were going.
Yeah.
And then
how could you? I mean, you would have had to experience it, really.
Shirley MacLaine.
Blowing my head now, man.
Yeah, maybe not. Anyway, but Past Lives was one of the songs that you had mentioned the first couple of tracks that you felt more of a connection with. Than
yeah. I think that song's amazing. And listening, we were listening to it right now, and it still has the same. Like his voice doesn't sound like the Red House Painters. It doesn't. There's something sonically with that 12-string acoustic guitar, and they love 12-string guitars. They use them a lot. A lot of 12-string acoustic and a lot of 12-string electric, which is, I don't know why I said there's pretty much only two choices.
Well, and maybe you can shed a little bit of light on this as a musician. Like one of the things that occurs to me about this record in particular, I mean, it's not, you would never use the Wall of Sound moniker, but it's that it sounds like it's been recorded in a big room in a very similar way.
It's a very clean production.
Yeah.
But yet still gauzy.
It's a little dense.
But gauzy.
Gossamer.
Either of those. Yeah.
Do you have a G word to contribute here, Mark?
Saccharin.
Golly.
God
gee
damn
whiz.
It.
Yeah.
In the Clampett version of this.
I love how nobody can see this, but I love how Mark is sort of sitting in the corner with his arms crossed.
I'm slowly migrating away from everybody else.
Well, you're just sort of like, I'm so fed up with these fucking kids. He's like,
maybe if I sit over here far enough, none of them could see me.
It's my birthday, damn it.
All right, exactly.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, Mark, what's your take on that song or just on the record, the whole record?
Maybe I don't have as much of a musical dictionary as you guys do in my head, you know, but for me, and I said this at the top of the show, and it still rings true, Ocean Blue was a huge...
Several minutes later.
Huge influencer for me.
Early 90s pop.
Early 90s.
Yeah, they were
pop,
dream pop.
That open tuning 12-string guitar with that nice heavy gretsch laid over the top with a little bit of tremolo added to it.
You say you don't have a musical vocabulary? I'm sorry, what?
he is actually a musician.
That really does ring true with me. And this song, the first song and this song both really just... That's immediately where I went when I first started listening to this album, and I still can't get beyond that. And there are a lot of other bands that you've brought up, and I can agree with some of those comparisons. But really, that's kind of what I keep going back to. Like you're saying, Shane, that 1994 kind of that vibe that was going on.
I don't know if we talked about this during a podcast or if we talked about this outside of a podcast, but I was talking to somebody about this. Who knows?
Basically, it was discussed.
I was having a conversation
at some point.
With a person. At one time.
There was more than one person.
And it may or may not have been. In this room. So, which is also my garage.
Could have been your daughter.
Yeah. Okay, now... So that was the first funny joke you've landed all night. You almost made me ruin my computer. I literally almost spit shit out on it. So, thanks.
Not
thank
literally
you for not spitting shit.
Well, I think literally and shit
Kevin,
should
Kevin
not
had
go
a
there.
Point.
I fucked it up. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, so we segued.
There's
out
something
of my
you may or may not have said to one or more
yeah,
people.
Yeah, now we segued out of it. All I can't remember what it was. So, but maybe I'll circle back to it. But,
I blame Shane.
You know what? Why don't we go ahead and go to the intermission?
Actually, so, yeah, okay, we'll go to the intermission. So I remember the story. We're going to tell the story, and then we're going to drag all of you to intermission, or a few minutes with, which is what we call our...
Or do impressions of Ozzy Osbourne via Red Fox.
Yeah, so basically the thing that I wanted to share a few minutes ago was that that in 2002 I had occasion to go to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland, and... One of the things that when Mark was talking a little bit about the Ocean Blue and specifically the record Cerulean, like I can hear a lot of that in this. I could see sort of how you would make that comparison. But there's a really cool little display that they had in the entrance of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame several years ago where you could take like basically they were showing the etymology of songs and sort of how one band would influence another. And the example that I used was, so you could click on a bit from one of the Pixies songs, and then they'd be connected to Nirvana, and then you could click on that bit from a Nirvana track and hear, like, essentially hear the direct influence. And so I heard a lot of that going on in this record. And
I actually know like a little weird related anecdote to that. So
tell us.
Pixies and Nirvana actually had the same manager, but Kurt was such a huge Pixies fan that when he was having a meeting with said manager, and I don't remember the guy's name, but Black Francis stopped by, and he was like, "Hey, do you want to meet?" You know, Charles is his actual name.
Yeah.
And Kurt was fucking freaked out. He was like, "No, I'm sorry, I can't." Like, he was like just too like starstruck to be able to meet his idol.
That's actually kind of great in a way.
No, I think it's a really sweet story.
Yeah, especially given how big that band became. But anyway, I just didn't want to get through to the break without making sure that I.
But yeah, I certainly can see like a Cerulean, era, Ocean Blue, and actually I can't name one other Ocean Blue record, but like that was a good record. But I can certainly see the musical DNA.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's take a departure and try a little something different. We won't tell you exactly what it is. But Mark chose this week's A Few Minutes With song.
Good Lord.
And that's coming up next.
So Mark, this week's A Few Minutes With, that was you, correct?
That was me, yeah.
Enlighten?
You know, about 3 weeks ago, Jack Bruce passed away from liver cancer. And
Talk about what this is first and who Jack Bruce is before. I was gonna back into it. Okay, I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. Jack Bruce was one of the power members of Cream back in the '60s, and the song that I picked for this week is one that he wrote the music for. It was co-written. The lyrics were written by Pete Brown, and was a very important song for me in high school, and probably before high school even. And that song is White Room by Cream, and I also kind of came to this one not just because the unfortunate recent passing of Jack Bruce. Even he was 71. He lived a great life. He wrote some great music, but also just because of kind of that connection that I have with the album this week. And I know that this is supposed to be a complete departure, but there was that connection for me of kind of to your past, and this was something that was really important to me. So
I will say that for whatever reason, Cream is one of those bands, and this song is this song being one of the ones that gets a lot of play from their their catalog.
Certainly, yes, yeah.
Catalog. They sound like, I mean, this band sounds like the epitome of the '60s to me. Like, and
for
this,
sure.
This
song I think they wrote it that way.
Well, you know what I mean. Obviously, like in retrospect, we can frame things differently, but. But to me, like, there are 60s songs outside of the Beatles and outside of the Rolling Stones and outside of, you know, whatever, the Troggs, that transcend.
Beatles, Stones, Troggs.
Yeah.
That triumph.
Donovan.
Yeah. That, you know, that transcend, like, and maybe, you know.
The Archies.
Yeah. Exactly. That transcend that era a little bit. But this band. You know, I don't necessarily know that Eric Clapton should always heed the word of Rolling Stone, but if that's indeed
what
happened.
Well, let's play a little bit of the song, and let's come back and let's talk about it.
Okay.
Is that your best Nigel Tufnel?
Totally.
You're just all on impressions tonight.
Yeah. Was that Red
you
Fox
should take
doing
the
Nigel
shit
Tufnel?
Out of the road, too. You should open up. You should be an impressionist comedian.
Armadillos in our trousers.
Open up for Kevin.
I don't even know what the hell he's talking about. All right. So we're going to we'll play 2.5 seconds of this song, and then we're going to come back. No, just kidding. We're going to play a little bit of what is Nights at White Castle? What's the name?
White Groom. I want to hear that song, too.
I really do want to hear that song. This is Cream's White Room.
All right. Cream's White Room. Here we go. In a white room with flowers.
devastation. Black roof country, no gold payment, tired starlings. Silver horses ran down moonbeams in your dark eyes.
Shane, White Room, discuss.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Thank you, sir. Okay, so when I was... Well, this song, there's a couple of things that I want to say. We were just watching the video, and I love that.
A lot of close-ups in that video.
There were a lot of close-ups, and there were also...
severe close-ups.
It seemed like somebody was taking the zoom shutter and just moving it really fast, and then also like deliberately shaking the camera. I mean, I guarantee you what was cutting edge in video in 1967 is basically when you give your 2-year-old niece a camera phone.
She's four, but
well, no, I'm just taken. No, I'm not saying you. I'm not saying
he's talking about 2 years ago.
Yeah. Okay,
when you would have given her
a camera phone. Yes,
it let her run around. Yes, exactly. And there's a couple of things that I think about this. So when I was listening to the beginning part of the – number one, I had never heard the whole 5-minute-long song. There's this part in the beginning where it's like operatic and there's timpani and like – like and there's like – and all this stuff. They do that 3 times in the song. And the first time in the very beginning, I want to see dudes in puffy, ruffly collars and puffy sleeves. Guess what? That's what they were wearing in the video we just watched.
They're all Mike Myers'd up.
Yes. right. On my bucket list, that definitely just
happened. Apparently, I have a penchant for the operatic kind of theatrical performance. Yes.
Well, then it settles into some pretty good rock and roll.
So far, your 2 selections, yes. Although, let's differentiate. Cream is miles away from Meatloaf.
Yeah, this is just good, solid rock and roll.
This is solid rock and roll that is not regional musical
also,
theater.
Can I just say, I don't know, are you hungry? Like everything that you choose is like a food
related.
Thing.
Yeah.
Like if you just wait.
Yeah. Well, you just have some meatloaf with cream on top.
Yeah.
So when I was in junior high, my mom briefly remarried this she remarried this fucking moron dude, and he would tell me like what all these like 70s and 60s songs were about, and got them all wrong. again, the dude is a moron. But this is one of the ones that he genuinely loved, and he told me all the things this was about, and he was like, this is about the Vietnam War and all this stuff. And so today, like, I've never really listened or never really paid attention to the lyrics, and I noticed when I was reading about the song that there was a poet that wrote the lyrics. And they're actually pretty – they're nonsensical, but the words are strung together really well. I don't think that – okay, I'll just read some of it to you. In the white room with black curtains near the station, black roof country, no gold pavements, tired starlings. Silver horses run down moonbeams in your dark eyes. Dawn light smiles on you, leaving my contentment.
By the way, moonbeams totally – name checks that era. Like, that word alone.
Well, and I just noticed that he has a penchant for Hughes. H-U-E-S.
Not guy's name Hughes.
Not dude's name Hughes.
I was so, like, yeah. How do you
but
know
no,
that about him?
But, like, you know, shades of colors and shit. He
so
fucking
a couple
just
of
brings
thoughts
a lot
about
of them
this.
Up.
I mean,
yeah, the lyrics in this song are one of the best parts of it, even though none of it makes any sense to me. It's just beautifully written, I feel like.
Yeah, and Pete Brown also wrote the words for Sunshine of Your Life and I Feel Free to the other
Sunshine
Cream.
Of Your Love?
Sunshine of Your Love, sorry. And did I say life?
Yeah.
Steal My Sunshine?
Totally different song.
Yes. That song too.
Walking on Sunshine. Yeah. He also wrote the words for Walking on Sunshine.
Dude was cranking out some hits throughout the decades.
He had the whole Sunshine spectrum.
But basically he said that this was basically written from the... writing a monologue about a new flat is what he put. So this is basically a guy sitting in a flat who's taken a girlfriend off to the train station. She's left on a train, and then he goes out to a pub and finds another girl to sleep with, but he still is waiting for the train to come back. So
can I just say one other thing that struck me, and I frankly didn't occur to me until right now, but on the Stern show this past week when Jack Bruce passed away, one of the things that Howard Stern talked about was how, like, sort of what a tragic passing that was, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But what strikes me, and we talk about this not every week, but we talk about this reasonably often enough, that, like, how cemented you are by what it is that you connect with in your formative years. Like, Cream feels like 1,000 years ago to me, and, like, probably, like, it's difficult for me
to... I think they were, like, still a band when you were born.
I believe you also, yeah, like...
But yeah, you probably weren't listening to that much rock and roll in your infancy.
Yeah, probably not that much. But anyway, but the point being, like, that you connect with the things when you connect with them, and those, it is not to be understated, a la Taylor Swift, how we cement those relationships. And I think that that's interesting, and it's interesting about any era that you're talking about, and sort of, you know, I don't know. I mean,
all right, yeah, I'm just freaked out how you brought that full circle.
Yeah.
He's pretty good at that.
Yeah,
there's a fair amount of research being done right now about how music that you listen to in your teenage, preteen through teenage years, the reason that it sticks with you because of the work that it does on your...
I know that our father, like, basically...
Who art in heaven?
Who art in Wimberley.
Yeah, who art in Wimberley. And we have made this joke, but it was many, many podcasts ago.
And sad even then.
It's still funny.
Anyhow, he did not, like, his musical taste did not develop after he got married and had kids.
You know what? That actually brings up a really interesting point, because I've noticed that, like, so my wife inherited some of her parents' record collection, and I know that you and I both scoured our parents' record collection, and there was a lot of, like, sort of minstrel, like, M-I-N-S-T-R-E-L.
Thank you for clarifying.
Stay with me, assholes.
See, like,
we are all 14-year-old boys.
Yes,
at heart.
Exactly. But there was a lot of that. There was a lot of that. That sort of folk
Renaissance fair.
That was like,
my love
sold
a silver
shit ton of
spoon.
I found, like, multiple versions of the same shitty album.
I had a Jethro Tull dalliance when I was in high school.
But did you, like, stand and cross one leg over your knee while you played the flute?
I did not do that while I played the flute. But,
I did.
well, of course,
I
Mark
can't
did.
Play a flute any other
so
way.
Here's the
why
point.
Would you be able to?
Here's the point. Like, and I don't know. Like, I don't have the proper perspective to be able to dig into this, but clearly at some point in the late 60s to, say, early to mid 70s, there were lots of those particular type of records that were being sold, lots of the, like, sort of folky stuff that it had literally no staying power. Like, if you ask anybody who's a musical fan of that era, who's not, you know, in their mid-60s to 70s now, like I have no idea what any of that shit is, but it's everywhere. If you look
at
some
of
those...
Yeah, not all of it.
Like,
I would say that there are exceptions to that, certainly. You know, Richard Thompson is somebody who's still
Richard Thompson,
making a lot of fans.
But Richard Thompson combined elements of English folk with a virtuosic guitar playing in rock and roll.
Sure.
But I think what you're talking about is see, this is what I think about that.
It's the pop version of whatever that was.
Well, what I think is, I mean, you can see, like the folk, the genesis of folk, the folk renaissance in the 60s, or it's beginning in the late 50s, when you really start to see that Pete Seeger stuff and Woody Guthrie's remnants lead into Bob Dylan. But then you had this huge thing that it had nothing to do with actual folk music, like folk songs. It was just sort of like acoustic guitars and lots of lyrics. And I think that there was this offshoot that led back to more traditional music, but as a Mighty Wind would show you, like, I mean, it's a costume, it's a Ren Faire,
like,
version of the traditional experience.
Hey guys,
to get away from the
hey guys, in the white room. Remember when we were talking about that?
Yeah, 10 years ago.
Sorry, I don't mean to take us way down the rabbit hole. It just occurred to me that there are in difference to Cream, like Cream at the very least had pedigree. And there was lots of stuff that seemed to be put together by record labels, maybe, that just didn't have this.
Well, I mean, it was like, good songs. I mean, they were good players. I mean, I think Ginger Baker was a shitty drummer, but that's just what I like in drums.
Well,
I mean,
he's one of those guys that people just accept as like, oh, it's like Neil Peart and shit, man. Like, he's just like amazing. Like, Ginger Baker
is not like, that.
Well, I mean, people talk about him
in reverence.
He claims responsibility for that 5/4 intro that you
yeah, well, that, but that's a different thing that I'm talking about. I mean, if you go back and listen to the song, the loudest thing in the mix is the drums. You never hear that. I swear to God, we'll leave and we'll talk about this next week's show. Go back and listen to the song with headphones on. The thing that's turned up the loudest in the mix are the drums, and quite frankly, he couldn't carry a fucking beat. Like, he can't keep time in the song. Not to say he's not an imaginative drummer, but he can't keep time in the song. And then, so the song, like, I'm just gonna like cut here as though there were a mix in the middle of what we're talking about. I was talking for about 10 minutes, and so then I'm listening to it, and it has this like crazy intro, the 5/4 intro with the opera and the shit, and then it goes into a pretty decent rock song. And then there's like the chorus, then there's the other verse, and then it goes back into the thing, and then inexplicably it goes into a fucking third verse. And then during the third verse, it's just like there's just like this wah-wah guitar in the bottom of the, like, and it goes on and 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 on. Just stop it after the second puffy sleeve.
Yeah, but that's how they did it back then, I think.
So, R.I.P. Jack Bruce. We have extended a few minutes.
Yeah, we've been out here for a while.
Maybe an hour.
Thank you for indulging.
We've gone off on the cliff. We are now Wile E. Coyote looking around and like, oh, crap, we're not on the cliff anymore.
So let's get back to the
we've got to change
business at hand.
Yeah, so we're going to get back into the record. That was a few minutes with. We'll be back with a little bit more real estate. So that was some cream. That was actually a lot of cream. There was a whole lot of cream going on there. Yeah, there might be a cholesterol issue or whatever it is that you get with a lot of cream.
It was almost half and half right there.
I still want to know what Mark's issues are that he's bringing up food every week.
I know, yeah.
Hungry.
But if this were... We should bring
him some snacks next time.
If this were a movie thing, would you suggest that we do meatballs?
I might.
Yeah.
You know, honestly, I can go in the entire week without even thinking about beef jerky, and then I come here and I just sit there and just covet.
And you're like,
dude, you can totally have some.
Like,
you've been looking at it. You're like, go for it.
You're like, I have my white wine. What is missing? Clearly, it is some beef jerky.
I need a Sprite and some beef jerky.
I just know how to pair.
Meanwhile. So we wanted to ease our way back into real estate. We have some future listings, as it were.
I realized that I kept saying Easy for their album before, and then it just dawned on me that the album is Days. Easy is my favorite song on that album. But I just
such
had
a dick. Why are you such a dick?
First,
I think
runs in my fucking blood,
agreed,
dude.
I thought we agreed on the break that we were going to let this slide.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, Ryan, you need to back off.
I know. Okay.
I like the episodes where it starts off and you guys are thinking all of the shit at the same time, and then it slowly breaks down, and then the episode ends right before it gets terrible.
It's like a bad marriage.
And then I'm hitting him in the head with the microphone.
Ouch! Got me in a headlock.
I've been shot. It's Ryan as John David Stutz. So anyway, you know, there were a couple of other tracks that I thought that I really connected with.
Buckwheat. Sorry, go ahead.
Do you believe he shot buckwheat? Oh, yeah, that's all he ever talked about.
Oh, yeah, that's all he ever talked about.
Kind of a loner.
It's like, he was a nice guy, sang in the choir. Oh, do you believe he shot buckwheat?
Oh, yeah. Definitely, yes. He certainly shot buckwheat.
It was all he ever talked about. One of the things I thought there were a couple of tracks that I connected with on this record more than the single. And I thought, you know, we've already talked about Past Lives being a kind of a cool change of pace, and you can certainly make the argument, if you're using the mixtape scenario, that there are a lot of the songs on this record that would be a change of pace for, you know, the tempo of some other stuff that would typically end up on a mixtape. But one of the songs that I particularly thought was, you know, I found engaging was Crime. They say crime doesn't pay. This paid a little bit.
So you were engaging in crime?
I was engaging in this kind of crime.
He was engaged.
Yes, crime. I was engaged to crime.
It's a good song.
Yeah.
I'm going to go in there and bust up that little comedy trifecta there.
Sure. I think it did run its course, so
that's
probably
the first
fair.
Time I've ever been part of it. Yeah. Trifecta.
Comedy trifecta? Oh, yes. Kevin, he's like a Pied Piper. He'll lead you down the road and throw like
a disaster.
It's a good song. I mean, it's the same thing with the rest of the record. Taken out of context, like earlier today, I like to listen to the record and then re-listen to it the day of the show. And earlier today, I had it on in the background while I was washing dishes and making additional notes. And I said something like, I was like, this song's kind of pedestrian. And then my internet quit and it was down for about 15 minutes. And then I went and reloaded the album, played it again, started at this song. And I'm like, this song is great. Just in context with the rest of it, it starts to bleed into. That's sure. My beef with this record.
Yeah, no, I think you could do that. And I think in some ways, like, there is a there's a quiet. Like, for example, so if I were to contrast this with My Bloody Valentine's Loveless, which was the last record that Shane chose, but you weren't able to be here for that one. Like, so you think about like sort of the fact that there are some sort of great, I wouldn't call them pop songs, but there are great sort of undertones that are washed over in that record. In this particular album, they're not. You know, and obviously it's a different animal. But they're not buried in sort of layers of fuzz. They're sort of quietly out there for all to see. And so, yeah, I don't know. I think in that way, there are some, like, great songs are great songs. And you certainly have been out front with the fact that you have a pop sensibility that, like, you like great lyrical content. You like things that sort of, that seem to lead you down the path a little bit.
I like hooks, and sure. I think that the song, what I was alluding to earlier in the show, is that I think that this album has a very consistent, beautiful sound to it, and that's what I think is a lot of what Ryan and I were talking about earlier. When I said it's like an amazing background record, when you put the incense on.
Well, when you said that you were doing dishes to it earlier, I was like, yeah, the perfect.
Well,
yeah,
right. I mean, it's got some of the hooks aren't strong enough to differentiate each individual song from the next song.
Can I ask you this? What you said was that you were doing dishes and taking notes on this record.
A dish. Additional notes.
No. I would take a break and wash my arm off and make. You can see on the
spatter. It is a bit wilted.
Where the pencil.
His paper is wilted.
Together. Yeah.
No. The paper is like destroyed. See. You can see like where it's all bleeding together and stuff.
Look, okay.
There's
sure.
some spaghetti yeah. right there. Spaghetti
Shut
sauce.
Shut the fuck up, Mark. Happy birthday, bitch.
Yeah. I think Mark's starting
That's
to get
your
comfortable.
Next record. Happy birthday, bitch.
Yeah. Anyway,
So
why don't we hop into that? Why don't we play a little bit of Crime, and then we'll come back out and we'll talk some more, and then we'll probably share one more track before the end of the podcast.
Sounds good to me.
All right, this one is this one's Crime, coming up.
Don't know how to make it right.
now apparently we're checking mic levels with Ryan's diet options, which is nothing short of peculiar. It's like a science experiment in here.
Hey, man, but they're all good.
Yeah, right. We did beef jerky, and then we did Chardonnay.
Sweet tart.
Which this week we are
dropping. Laffy Taffy.
Slap into a Slim Jim.
Sprite.
So that was crime. So one of the things that there are a few things that we haven't talked about with regard to this record. And one of them is the idea that, not unlike Vampire Weekend, there's a certain when we did the Vampire Weekend record, the first Vampire Weekend record, there's a lot of talk about like sort of how those guys are of their collegiate space and they're very forward about it. And what Real Estate gets branded as is like being of suburbia. And one of the notes that like the Consequence of Sound review of this this record mentioned that the deceptive power of the suburbs is that you get older and they stay the same age, to use the McConaughey-ism.
Thank you, Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah. But beyond that, the thing that we haven't talked about that I thought was actually pretty interesting is the Chicago angle to this record, which is recorded at Wilco Studios.
I did not know that.
And so, like sort of the fawning Pitchfork review and the Consequence of Sound take on this is like there is a very like Chicago in particular as a city has seemed to embrace this record and this band.
Well, and Pitchfork's out of Chicago, correct?
They are. Yeah, they're out of Chicago. So anyway,
Real Estate aren't.
They're from New Jersey, no. And guess where they live now?
Brooklyn.
Goddamn right.
I'm right.
And they were here during Austin City Limits Fest. So now I'm kind of like actually sad that I didn't stick it out to go see their set. But again, it's a good investment.
What's wrong with you?
Yeah, well, actually, it's the old guy thing. Like, I just didn't want to do the crowds. But one of the other reviews that I noted earlier mentioned that seems like their trajectory is such where they're going to be headlining some stuff that they've been on the undercard for if they keep producing the way that they're producing.
Well, it looks like when I was going through this record, the single Talking Backwards, it's got like, I don't know, 3 million plays or something. That's how we gauge these things, these post Casey Kasem days.
This significant.
This album definitely hit the top 50 in the U.S. I mean, it's weird how since the decline of the actual sales of CDs and records in stores have enabled bands like Real Estate to crack the top 50. I mean, I don't know how many actual albums they sold, but there's no way that this album would have cracked the top 50 in 1989, not stylistically, just based on, you know, like.
Or is it more that the people that actually still buy CDs and LPs like this type of music?
I think there's something to it. I mean, Morrissey had a number one 10 years ago. I mean, there's.
Really?
Yeah. You Are the Quarry went number one in the U.S.
Well, I think that's entirely possible. One of the things that, like, the way that this, other than the fact that I had heard the single on the radio, just like you guys, one of the things that attracted me to the idea of, like, pulling this record was that I came across Pitchfork has a list in progress of their top records from the 2010s through the present day. And so they're not waiting for 2015 or 2020 or whatever. They've started their list. And what occurred to me as I started to go through it and try to find some stuff that I wasn't familiar with was like there's a shit ton of electronica in there, and there's a lot of sort of rap and hip hop that's been constructed in different ways. And then I flipped on satellite radio on my way to work today. And Skrillex was on Stern, and I was like, oh, that's interesting, because that's sort of a harbinger of sort of where things are. It's like, those guys are just like, the high-profile shit gravitates to the high-profile shit, and this is a record that didn't sound like anything else that was listed among the 20 to 30 albums that I looked at as possibilities for tonight, I was like, that sounds interesting to me.
Nice,
I
mean, kid, that's great.
Yeah, you're right. It's sort of, in some weird way, if you think about, well, but this is a much stronger single than anything that these guys have so far, up to this point, written. If you think about Crowded House's Don't Dream It's Over, like that just perfect song got dropped in the middle of fucking the middle of the 1980s music, which sounded nothing like that. In fact, that's much closer to what we're listening to right now. So that's, sure. I guess, why I immediately thought that. You always have little outliers like that creep in.
There's, see, and I won't go too far into this. Just I think we could talk about this for a long time, but I think that outlier is a great way to put it. There are these bands out there that don't get the radio airplay that are making this kind of music, you know, and your comment earlier about how, you know, Real Estate is up in the charts now with this album, and that's something that wouldn't have happened, you know, back when Crowded House was releasing albums. But there were those bands out there that were doing those similar things. It's just they weren't getting the radio airplay, I think.
Let me ask this question, like, as a follow-up. So does that mean that, like, so is Melody dead? Are guitar-driven records dead? Is understated music dead?
No. You have to understand where I'm coming from when I say that about the Crowded House thing, especially, is that you've seen over the course of, especially in the, excuse me one second, in the 80s, 90s.
Slim.
Yeah, I know. In the last, you know, 30, 35 years, the charts are more and more dominated by R&B influenced music and dance influenced music. And so while there's definitely a place for guitars and rock and roll, and I mean, Jesus Christ, Radiohead has sold ungodly amounts of records in the last 20 years.
Love Jesus Christ, Radiohead.
That's a, yeah.
Saw them open up for the heebie-jeebies.
Didn't they do that song Right Here, Right Now? Right here, right.
Jesus Christ, Radiohead, yeah.
Oh, and that's timely because it's the
Radiohead Jones.
The 25th anniversary of the Berlin Wall falling, which they wrote that song about.
There you go.
Because I'm
Wait,
a
what?
Right.
I don't think any of us know what we're talking about.
I actually kind of am following Shane's thread of logic, which scares me a little bit, but that totally happened.
So it matters if you think about, like, the dominant paradigm has been in definitely in the last 15, 20 years, in top 20 music, top 40, R&B, rap, dance music primarily.
Skiffle.
No, that we're talking it's across the pond. Ryan, you have so much to contribute to the conversation. Why don't you continue that?
No, I'm good, actually. And actually, I do have, like, a little bit of thing. I looked up the word pathos.
A little bit of thing?
I do have a little bit of a thing. I did look up the word pathos because, like, this record actually just sort of brought that word to my mind. Pathos, pathos, potato, potato,
pathos.
Tomato, tomato. Let's
Greek
call the whole
words.
Thing off. But, okay, read this, Shane, and see if it doesn't seem at least a little bit emblematic of a feeling you get from this record.
An element, an experience, or an artistic representation evoking pity or compassion.
Like, that, I feel like this has, like, a compassionate kind of, you know, it's a hug in the afternoon when you need one.
But
isn't that what we all need after,
like,
Meatloaf's
Bat like
Out of Hell?
I feel like I needed a hug
but
after
I don't
hearing
think
this, though.
I mean, if we're going to nitpick, I don't think you're utilizing pathos in the way that's normally, I mean, it's more of an, like, it typically uses more of an empathetic.
Isn't that what we need after last week? Doesn't everybody
Definitely.
Need, like, this could be, this is like the chicken soup for the podcast.
Let's just make sure this hug doesn't go on too long.
I don't want to sidebar on this too much, but do you know my story about, like, when I got drunk and ordered a book off Amazon? Have I told that
no.
on here?
No, you haven't. No. I've never heard this story. So
actually,
do.
You told me about this book, and it just showed up in my mailbox one day, and I did not at all remember ordering it, but it was Beavis and Butthead's Chicken Soup for the Butt.
And good night, everybody.
Yeah, I was checking my mail and, like, the fuck is this? And I went back and checked my bank records. I had like 4 o'clock in the morning, just like ordered it off Amazon.
Did you enjoy it?
They wrote.
Oh yeah, it's great.
Anyway, that's hilarious. So I guess to a small degree, maybe to a large degree, this record was designed as a little bit of a salve for last week's record.
It's a hug and a salve.
Yeah. So I'll throw a special shout out to Mike Stevens, who sent me a list of unusual salves the last time that I used that word. And we'll try and work those into a future podcast. I would like to spin at least one last song as we're drawing a little bit long on this one. Ryan, you mentioned there was one of the last.
I like Horizon.
All right, let's do
Shane
that.
Does not. But
no, I think that's one of the two more boring songs on the record. But
you are allowed to have that opinion.
And just disagreements are good. So let's go to Horizon. We're gonna play that one next. This is Horizon.
That's Horizon, which gives me a lot of head nodding and a little bit of toe tapping.
I remember when the video for this was like, "Can you hear me now?" Like in the early 90s.
Or oh, what are you talking about?
Or the early 2000s? Can you Horizon?
Oh, the Horizon Wireless?
Yeah.
No, that's Verizon Wireless. Yes. It's really close.
Kevin's rubbing off on me.
Exactly. Yeah, sure. Blame
We're
that
so
on
close.
Me.
Dude, I think your wife's knocked up, man. Like, you're telling dad jokes.
Whoa, no.
I'll always take credit for my own shitty dad jokes because some of them are specifically designed for the groan factor, but I had nothing to do with that one. So,
yeah.
But seeing it from the outside, you can get a little bit of our perspective.
You know,
yeah.
It's you roll. After a while, you just roll. I don't know. I think...
let me just say, I think that is a thoroughly pleasant song.
It is a pleasant song. I mean, yeah. The funny thing is, like, after last week, there are criticisms about pleasantry. Like, that's fascinating to me. Yeah. Like, that you guys are, like, suddenly critically on point. Like... Because you've been given this pinata to beat for a week, and then we come back and it's I don't know.
It's a good sounding record. Look, if you're putting it in, I mean, we pretty much have done nothing but say that the record is good for the whole time. I mean, I definitely think that song is more effective and sounds better than it does in the context.
No, it sounds good if you play it like by itself.
Yeah, like
does.
In a mixtape, that album, that song pops up, or you hear it on the radio, you're like, oh, who the fuck is that? But after like 7 songs that sound exactly like it.
Well, and I do think that you raise an interesting point, which is that do we listen to these in the context of being an album, or do we listen to them as a collection of individual tracks? And like, obviously...
The way the kids are listening to them now? No, it's individually.
It would be the latter. Yeah.
Not necessarily. But
unless you're a Taylor Swift fan.
How old are you, Shane?
Doesn't matter. I'm telling you that you say that like that, but I mean, you always say like the kids and how the kids are listening. I mean, vinyl is more popular than ever.
That's true, but
not
it's still
than ever.
Like, it's
but
still like 2% of like record
the
sales.
The people that are listening to this band, there's a shit ton of people that are buying vinyl and listening to
that's
it
true.
From start to finish.
Like, well, yeah, for this demographic,
it's a great album from start to finish in the right context, like we talked about before, like a
rainy days,
record or
doing dishes.
Yeah. Yeah, I just bonked myself in
doing
the nose.
Doing dishes
with the
in
mic.
The rain.
Yeah. So anyway, it was my intent to do something that felt like a vast
completely different from Meatloaf.
Yeah. You got it. Sometimes like you have to have a palate cleanser. And this is definitely a palate cleanser.
This is our sorbet.
Yes, it is. It's a sorbet after Meatloaf, which is
It's like our Chardonnay for our beef jerky.
Perhaps, yes.
Now we're about to be on to the Sweet Tarts course. No, thank you, Kevin.
Oh, sure.
For doing this record. No, I really enjoyed listening to it.
I did too.
What's happening next week?
Well, so next week, we alluded to this, but let's just go ahead and drop the bomb. So how long do you, Kevin's wife, Allison, and is about to
drop her new release, as I never get tired of saying.
Yeah, we're inside of
on vinyl.
Thank you. We're inside of a couple of weeks before my next little one is born, and we think that he's probably going to be early as opposed to on time because our last one was that way, and so it's all but assured that I won't be here next week. Mark is going. Thank you for that, by the way.
What
doesn't have to be a sad trombone.
I love how you're like giving withering gazes like to one and then across the garage to the other, across to the other.
I know. Well, now I have to fix my stare in different directions.
All right.
So I'm getting to it. So the deal is. Mark has agreed to step in and fill my shoes for a few weeks, and
I'm your Huckleberry, as it were.
Really
well, thanks. Yeah.
But thank you, Mark.
And that's not the best way that I could put it, but because he's more than able. But Mark will be the third part of the triumvirate here for a little while. And
I will be the adult, guys.
Yes,
that's true.
Yeah, so we'll be starting promptly. Yeah.
No dispute there.
Yeah. Anyway, beyond
that. Turned 52 today.
Yeah, that's right.
Exactly.
72. You look young for
that. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. Anyway, so thanks, Mark, for all of your help and all the help that you were yet to provide.
No, honestly, my pleasure. I am honored to be a part of this, you guys.
Yeah, we've
got a great thing going.
We're looking forward to it. It's going to be fun. We're going to be moving locales, too, so out of the garage for the first time, except the one little.
We're gonna go to my garage, guys.
We're gonna go to another garage.
Yeah, so maybe the acoustics will be a little bit different. But beyond that, next week's record. Who's got next week's record? Ryan?
It's yours, Ryan.
Oh, is it me? I've been saving this one up. It's Spiritualized. Ladies and gentlemen, we are floating in space.
Good call. We're back in the 90s.
I have never heard it. I have read a bunch of about it. Because I'm a little music geek and I like to read about music, but I just somehow never got around to that one.
And so, even though I'm not going to be here next week, I mean, I'll be alive. I just won't be part of this podcast.
Macabre.
Maybe we can Skype Kevin in.
Yeah.
Maybe from
hello, everybody.
Room. Yeah. Hey, honey, push. Oh, by the way, guys, here's what I think of this record.
Yeah. Now, I'm going to do that. So the way that this sort of ended up falling, with Mark coming on board and picking last week's record, it sort of rejiggered things a little bit, and I would have ended up picking both the record and the few minutes with for this week, and so I asked to move the middle part to another week. And so instead, I'll be picking next week's a few minutes with, and I won't be here for it, but do you guys want to know what it's going to be?
Yeah.
It's going to be the Norwegian comedic duo Hjelvis Smash, What Does the Fox Say?
Oh, possibly one of my favorite songs of the last 2 years.
I have no idea what that is.
Oh, my God.
Oh, I thought you were giving complete distaste when your whole face, I was watching you and your face fell.
No, I haven't got a clue what that is.
Oh. I can tell you for one thing that song will now be in my brain for not only the next week, but the 5 weeks following.
Anyway, it's my lingering thank you to you guys.
Yeah, by thank you, you mean
fuck you?
No,
fuck you.
I
have no idea, actually. Like, I might love this song.
It's an
no
up
idea.
And down thing. There are very funny elements in the song.
It's kind of hilarious.
And certainly we'll get into this more once we actually are doing it. But I do like that song. But I also really hate that song.
Yeah, about halfway through it becomes
exactly
interminable.
Yeah. Anyway, That's something for you guys to slice and dice for next week. But I will miss sitting in on the podcast. But in the meantime,
but you'll be back, right?
I will definitely be back, and I'll probably have no sleep stories to tell, or I'll be delirious myself, in which case this thing could go completely weird. But in the meantime, this is Somebody Likes It. I'm Kevin Newsom.
I'm Ryan Newsom.
Shane Bartell.
And I'm Mark.
And we'll see you guys next week.